And welcome to the Issue Is podcast. Once again this week, the big issue that continues to dominate politics is police reform. What do we do next? A lot of people now realize that there are some real challenges, but how do we actually fix those? So one of the people in charge of trying to figure that out in the state of California is the Attorney General, Javier Becerra. We talked with him. He laid out, you know, 9 different ideas of what he wants to do. We dig into that. We also talked to him about the Dreamers, DACA, big Supreme Court decision this week on that front. And then we had a really interesting, powerful, emotional conversation about race and more with Kimberly Jones, who went super viral with that commentary that was shared by millions of people, shared by Oprah, shared by LeBron James, Madonna, Viola Davis, all these people talking about Kimberly Jones and how powerful her message is. And Elsie Granderson from ESPN and the LA Times and CNN and DAZN, who's not only a sports columnist and a sports host, but also a culture columnist and has thought deeply about history and about issues and was really, really fantastic. So it's an important conversation this week. It's sort of right where the zeitgeist is, and I hope you enjoy it. So we begin The Issue Is with the Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra. Welcome to The Issue Is for the first time, Mr. Attorney General.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. So let's put some of those reforms up on the screen so people know what we're talking about. It's a lot. It's 9 different reforms. Among them, we're talking about intervention, changes on chokeholds, changes on de-escalation, proportionality, moving vehicles, all these different things. For critics of that may say, look, I'm a cop. It's tough enough to be a cop as it is. We don't need more restrictions put on us. What do you say to them?
Actually, in California, you would find that most of our peace officers wouldn't say that because many of these agencies throughout California have already adopted some of these things, but they're not statewide. I think California is further along than most parts of the country, but these are all common sense. They're all based on best practices and research. And I think most people in our communities would say, you mean we don't already do those things? And so it's a way to go. And unfortunately, I'm finding that a lot of folks in law enforcement, especially our chiefs and our sheriffs, are interested in trying to do reforms and show the public that our agencies are ahead of the curve.
When you look at these extraordinary protests that we've been seeing the last few weeks, hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets, one thing that many of the protesters have said is that they feel like police unions are too powerful and that district attorneys general that are getting campaign donations from police unions should then not be in charge of potentially prosecuting the police. What do you think about that? And do you think that police unions are too powerful?
Let me first say, I think there's too much money in the entire political system altogether, whether it's contributions from one source or the other. So if we want to abolish contributions altogether or abolish them from some sources going to certain candidates, I'm all for that conversation. There is a great need to make sure that our electoral process has the confidence of the voters. And to me, one of the best ways you can make that happen is to get rid of money in the entire process of voting.
Do you think there should be a sort of special prosecutor or somebody outside of the system that looks at police specifically when it comes to prosecutions?
There have been calls for my department, the Department of Justice in California, to take over investigations and prosecutions. I think all of that should be on the table. We have done some of those cases in the past. We don't have the capacity to do it for the 58 counties in the state and for all the cities who have police departments. But those are all questions that we have to answer.
All right, let's talk for a moment about masks. I've put on a mask that was sent to me by Holly Mitchell, the state senator that has California all over it, and I love it for the California show, so I'm wearing this. But there's been so much made this week, the governor of California saying that everybody's got to wear a mask when they're outside and they're not able to properly socially distance. How do you enforce that, and sort of what's the legal justification for that? Because there's a lot of people that are very frustrated when they hear that.
Great question. Very difficult to give a good answer. I think all of us understand why the governor is saying all of us should be wearing a mask when we're out in public and we can't socially distance. Try to enforce that. Do our police officers patrolling the streets looking for folks who aren't wearing a mask, or do we have them doing things that prevent other more serious types of crime? It's very tough to give you a real precise answer. I will say this. You want to be safe, you want your family to be safe. I have an 86-year-old mother who lives with me. I am going to make sure that I'm following the rules because I'm not interested in coming home. I may feel like I'm pretty healthy. But if I do something that makes it so that my mother contracts the virus, I'm never going to forgive myself. It's upon us. It's on each of us to follow the rule.
One issue that you've been especially passionate about in recent years is DACA. With this week, we saw the Supreme Court allowing DACA to go forward, sort of a technicality in the way that the Trump administration tried to move forward on it. What did you make of this court, this conservative court, on both DACA and gay rights, sort of pushing back on the president?
So at the end of the day, if you sort of see at the heart of what's going on in these Supreme Court decisions, what they're essentially saying is that, especially this decision on DACA, it's an indictment on the way President Trump does business. It's essentially sending to him a very clear message. Everyone in America must abide by the law, including the occupant in the White House. No one is above the law. Essentially, what the court said is, if you want to undo an executive order, which a president can, you still have to do it the right way.
Let's talk for a moment about you. On this show, we like to sort of show the personal side of politicians. It's your first time on this show. For you, when you think back on your childhood, when you think back on your parents, and you think back on how far you've come, what do you make of this moment in American history? And tell us a little bit about your journey to get to the place where you're at.
So I tell folks I'm an optimist, and it's probably because I'm the son of immigrants and it runs in my DNA. I remember my father's stories about how, as a young man, he couldn't walk into restaurants because of the signs that said no dogs, Negroes, or Mexicans allowed. That shapes you. I'm the first in my family to have a chance to go on to a university. And I remember the day I had a chance to introduce my parents to the president of the United States, a guy who went to the sixth grade, no farther than the sixth grade because he had to start working, a mother who didn't come to this country until she was 18 when she married my father. I had a chance to introduce them to, there you go, there's a photograph, Bill Clinton.
Yep.
I got to tell you, there's big, proud Americans, but nobody more proud than the two of those individuals who never could have believed that could happen. And so now I've got three daughters, all three of them you show there, all have now graduated from college. I always say, you know, the promise of America is it lets you punch above your assigned weight class. No one would have said to that little of immigrants, you're going to get to be attorney general when you grow up. And that's the beauty of this country. It truly does let you punch way above your weight class when you walk into that ring. And so I'm going to take advantage. I'm in a ring where folks probably didn't expect me to be. So I'm going to punch hard. I'm going to make some noise.
Beautifully said. Thank you very much for sharing your views. And thank you so much for sharing your story as well. Attorney General Javier Becerra.
Thank you.
So if I played 400 rounds of Monopoly with you and I had to play and give you every dime that I made, and then for 50 years, every time that I played, if you didn't like what I did, you got to burn it like they did in Tulsa and like they did in Rosewood, how can you win?
Kimberly Jones' commentary on Black history went super viral, being seen by millions after celebrities like Oprah, Ava DuVernay, Viola Davis, LeBron James, even Madonna talked about it. On this Juneteenth weekend, Kimberly is part of our panel along with LZ Granderson. Let's start with Kimberly. She's an author who has written several books and is working on several more. Her latest book is entitled I'm Not Dying With You Tonight. LZ Granderson is one of the few people in media with more jobs than me. He co-hosts The Morning Show on ESPN Radio in L.A. He's a reporter for DAZN. He's a columnist for CNN. And he writes about culture and sports for the L.A. Times. Here he is reporting from one of the recent marches through Los Angeles. LZ, Kimberly, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time, both of you.
Thank you
very much for having me.
All right. So, Kimberly, let's start with you, because you talked about this issue of Black history and it not being talked about enough. This week, Juneteenth became a point of national discussion in a way that it's never been before. As we sort of reexamine the way to talk about Black history, how do you think it should be talked about by Americans? And what do you think that white America can learn from your message?
I think the most important thing that we can recognize, right, is that Black history is American history. We are all, you know, nationals of this country, and so we need the full breadth of what has happened in this country to develop where we are in this nation. I think that's part of what happened with my video, right? It's like people were given entree into parts of history that they were never even aware of, and so it made some of the economic disparages and things like that, you know, come together more for them. But that should be taught in history across the board, because it's really not just Black history, it's American history.
And LZ, this week we saw images of signs of the Confederacy coming down on Capitol Hill, pictures of speakers that were part of the Confederacy coming down. There's this debate about sort of where we should, how we should think about our history, especially in the South. How do you think we should think about that time, and where should that go in our consciousness?
Well, I think it's important to know that there's a difference between remembering and honoring. We should certainly remember our history, but typically we save monuments and statues and buildings being named after people that we're honoring, which brings the question, why are we honoring people who wanted to leave the country, who rebelled against the country, who proudly called themselves rebels? If you're from a Union state, you're not waving the Confederate flag because it represents your heritage. You're waving it because you like white supremacy. You're from the Union.
And Kimberly, when we look into America's future, one of the questions is, what is policing going to look like? This week, we see the officer involved in the Breonna Taylor case fired. We saw criminal charges, murder charges in the Rayshon Brooks case. Recently, we saw murder charges in the George Floyd case. Are you satisfied with what you're seeing when it comes to police reform?
Well, I'm happy to see the arrests being made, because that's definitely a step in the right direction. I think that's been a large amount of the complaint that we've seen in the past, is that those arrests weren't even being made, that everything was just being swept under the rug. You know, the people being arrested that we've seen now, those are kind of like bandage moments, and we're going to have to dig a little bit deeper.
When you have bad police officers that need to be uprooted, then the system needs to do just that, not just to protect the integrity of the field, but also to protect the citizenry.
All right. Well, we will talk more when we come back. We're going to talk about the Veep stakes. We're going to talk about Colin Kaepernick.
As I actually told the vice president last night when I called him, that I think this is a moment to put a woman of color on that ticket.
And there are Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar on MSNBC pulling herself from consideration to be Joe Biden's running mate. At one point, she was the favorite to be VP, till it was discovered that years ago, she didn't prosecute the cop that eventually killed George Floyd in Minnesota. Let's talk about the Veep stakes with our panel, author Kimberly Jones and commentator LZ Granderson. LZ, so if that's really true, if Joe Biden does select a woman of color, which woman should he pick?
I haven't the slightest idea. I don't even know if he needs to pick a woman of color. You know, I don't try to spend too much time in the endorsement or advocacy business when it comes to politicians, but I can speak about worldview. And whomever he picks needs a worldview in which they look at this conversation of police reform and criminal justice, and they take it seriously. And they take it with a long lens. And shout out to Amy Klobuchar for playing politics. You knew you were going to get the VP position. You got ahead of it. You set your narrative that you were stepping away. Good for you for playing politics.
You said it, not me, but that's what I was going to say. Kimberly Jones, do you think that it would be helpful for Joe Biden to have a woman of color? And if so, is there one woman in particular you'd like to see?
I have to agree with my partner in crime over there. I think that you really have to look at what that person's politics are. But if my back was against the wall and I just had to pick somebody, I'm a huge fan of Stacey Abrams. I think she's the right woman for the job. I think the governorship for her here in Atlanta, in Georgia, was stolen from her. And I think she's someone that I feel I could trust with pushing the narrative along further.
What do you make of the senator from California, Kamala Harris?
I think she would be an interesting candidate, but again, I really think that he should not just put his focus on, I have to find a black female, because, you know, that's kind of contrived. I think he should really look at the person who has the right view on the overall picture.
What an endorsement for Kamala Harris. Put that on a campaign ad.
That's why I don't play that game.
Yeah, all right.
That is why I do not play that game.
LZ Granderson, let's talk about something I know you are passionate about, which is the issue of gay rights. And this week, you've been very brave in being open about being an openly gay man. This week, a historic week for gay rights, with the Supreme Court saying that employers cannot discriminate based off of sexual orientation. What did that moment in American history mean to you personally? And what do you think this week, with the Supreme Court going against the president multiple times, sort of meant for this moment in history as well?
Well, first and foremost, you know, I was very disappointed to know that we're still at this place. I know I'm supposed to be jumping down and celebrating, but let's pull back for a second. We're still at the place where the Supreme Court has to decide the dignity of Americans. We're still there. And there's a certain level of frustration. Now, obviously, I'm happy with the ruling, but why are we still ruling on this conversation? I think sometimes we get caught up in the imagery of modern family and seeing that, you know, gay people are getting married and lesbians are getting married and think everything is okay. But the reality is that just still, in most of the country, you could be kicked out of your apartment for being openly LGBTQ. So there's still a lot of work to be done on that part.
Up next, we're going to talk about something you both have been very open about, which is Colin Kaepernick and his future, and some thoughts on where we as a nation go from here. As we go to break, a reminder to log on to our website, theissueisshow.com, and also to send us an email. Tell us your thoughts as well. Theissueis@foxtv.com. We'll be right back. Former NFL quarterback hasn't played since he famously took a knee during the national anthem. But could this year be different for Colin Kaepernick? Back with our panel now, LZ Granderson, Kimberly Jones. LZ, as a sports columnist, sports host on ESPN, what do you think? Are we actually going to be seeing Cap playing this year?
I believe that there is a groundswell that's happening and that there will be an opportunity for Colin Kaepernick for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, if the current construct of the NFL bubble is still in place, there's going to be a situation in which, unfortunately, someone likely a quarterback maybe who's going to contract the virus and may have to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Number two, there's also been a change in the culture in terms of how they look at his kneeling to begin with. There used to be a pushback against it that people thought it was unpatriotic. They thought that it was disrespectful. And now people are seeing, unfortunately, because of the George Floyd video, that this is exactly what he was talking about. And the people who used to be dissenters are now in agreement with him that something needs to be done. And they're looking at his protest through a different lens. And number three, and I think this is the most important aspect of this conversation, he's damn good. He was damn good when he left. He was damn good now. So there's no reason why an NFL team that's trying to actually win games would decide not to at least bring him in and see if the guy that led the San Francisco 49ers to the freaking Super Bowl is still capable of winning games on Sunday and occasionally on Monday.
I do think there's been a shift in the conversation, and I think he'll come back. I find it really interesting that now people are switching their view on his peaceful protest. A lot of people have been saying, like, why can't you just protest peacefully? And the pushback that they've gotten is, well, that's what Cap was doing, and you didn't like that either.
As we wrap things up this week, the last few weeks, I've had commentaries that I've done myself, and I was thinking this week, I have two guests that are way better at doing commentaries than I am, so I'm not even going to try. I want to give you each, like, 30 seconds to try to give us, where do we go from here?
I will start by saying I was present and reported during the combined marches between LA Pride and Black Lives Matter. And as someone who has participated in and covered these two subjects extensively for decades, I can tell you it was the first time I can recall seeing a Pride flag next to a Black Lives Matter sticker. It It was the first time I saw openly gay, white, trans people carrying flags that said Black Lives Matter. So where do we go from here? I think we keep on this path of unity, where people are beginning to see that we're not each other's enemies, that if we just love each other and treat each other with respect, if we uplift each other, that we're a much better society and we're closer to the promise of America. What I saw during that march warmed my heart, and I would love my heart to be continually warmed by the unity of Americans.
Kimberly, last word to you.
I totally agree with him. Fred Hampton said, we don't fight racism with racism, we fight racism with solidarity. And I think that's the best thing that we can do. I think now that we've made noise, which I thought was brilliant and beautiful, and this was a movement that was created for and by the people uplifted their own voices. I think now it's time to get organized. It's time for us to vote. It's time for us to strategically get candidates that run, that we know have our best interests, that are centered around the community and care what the community, care about what the community wants. And I think if we encourage these young people, the masses of young people that we saw on the front lines, we'll have a new generation with a new perspective. They just need a little douse of wisdom to drop into that youthful energy, and we're going to have something amazing.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to all of our guests this week, all first-timers on the show. We love it when we can bring new people into the fold. I don't know if this is your first time listening or you're a frequent listener, but please tell other people about us. We're trying to get the word out about the show, so feel free to share out this podcast. Reach out to me in social media, at Alex Michelson. Love hearing your comments. Love hearing constructive criticism. And hopefully we can grow this this family that we have of people that are interested in important issues and do it in a respectful way. So thanks for listening. I'm Alex Michelson. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.